This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Alexandria, Virginia. We're broadcasting today from the mini auditorium of T.C. Williams High School. 50 years to the day after the Supreme Court's Brown v. Board decision, T.C. Williams looks like the poster school for integrated public education. Flags from more than 80 countries are in the foyer, along with a caption reading, "The flags displayed in our Hall of Nations represent the countries of origin of our students. We are proud of our diversity and invite you to share in the richness of our student body." At a time when many schools are less and less diverse, the halls at T.C. Williams are crowded with students of all colors and backgrounds. And our question on this historic anniversary is, how's it working? What's integrated education like? Does an integrated school mean equal education? Do integrated classrooms mean integrated lives? We have students and alumni from T.C. Williams with us in the audience today. We'll hear those stories. And we want to hear from you as well. What's happening at your school? Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now are three T.C. Williams seniors, Ashley Dawkins, Marquita Thompson, and Carlton Hummel. Ashley, let's start with you. Help our listening audience get a sense of your school. When we say T.C. Williams is diverse, what does that mean to you?
A lot of people from a lot of countries, different cultures, and like a mixing bowl of like kids. It's great.
are there some parts of the school that are more integrated than others? Are some classes more diverse than others?
I mean, I think it's kind of clear in some of the honors and AP classes, there's not as many minorities as there should be. It's kind of, we are the minority, especially black and minority males are kind of not as present as they should be. But other than that, the classes are pretty mixed.
What about sports? I mean, remember the Titans, the movie, of course, based here at what happened here at T.C. Williams all those years ago.
I think there's certain sports that are mixed, but you do see kind of a clear line between, like basketball and, you know, field hockey. There's different races, and there is a separation. Not because people don't want to mix; it's just because how they grew up playing basketball, you know, in the streets and playgrounds, and then it comes from also money. Some sports to play cost more money when you're younger, so I think it just depends where you come from, and that kind of separates the races more.
And what about the cafeteria?
I don't really eat in the cafeteria that much because I'm not going to lie. We have off-campus lunch. I'm usually off eating somewhere else. But, I mean, I've been in there a few times, and there is a separation between the races. But I think it's more of who people are comfortable with, not really because I don't want to sit with white people or vice versa. It's just because it's who they grew up with, who they came here with. Friends. It's not just because of race.
Marquita, what about you? Do you eat in the cafeteria from time to time?
No.
I'm detecting a trend here.
Well, I agree with Ashley when she's talking about how people, I feel as if like they self-segregate themselves in the cafeteria. Like if you go in there, you'll see the blacks with the blacks, the white with the whites. You might see a little mixture, but not much.
Carlton, would you agree?
I would. I unfortunately do eat in the cafeteria every day. And the black people just sit by themselves, the white people sit by themselves. That's only sometimes that you see mixes, like there's one table that's dedicated to playing cards one time, and then everyone's just there. Only when there's a common interest, they usually mix in the cafeteria.
And is somebody else, another table, speaking Spanish and on?
Definitely.
Okay. Marquita, let me ask you, what do you value about going to an integrated school?
What I value is that there's different cultures and there's other people that I can get to know. And basically, I get to meet different people and get to see where they come from and interact with different people, basically.
Did it change the way you saw yourself? I mean, did you come from an integrated middle school?
Yes.
So when you got here, this was something you were accustomed to, right?
Yes.
And so when you came here, it presented no challenges for you? No, nothing special?
No, not at all, because most of my friends are all different cultures, and I just look at them like regular people. I don't look at them as their race. Mm-hmm. I just see them as who they are, their character.
What about what Ashley was telling us about before? Do you not apply for an advanced placement or honors class? Because, well, that's not for you?
Well, actually, this is my first year taking an AP course. And the only reason why I took it was because I wanted to challenge myself and know that I can take it and I can do it. And I wanted, because I have been in a lot of regular courses, and I feel as if it's not the same, like you don't get the same amount. But I wanted to prove to myself that I can do it. And if you have the determination, you shouldn't let people bring you down and not feel as if you can't succeed in life.
But you felt there was a barrier between you and that AP class. It was something you needed to achieve?
Yes.
Huh. And you feel better about yourself because you did it?
Yes, I do.
You still don't eat in the cafeteria, though. I wonder, do you think, and let's put this to Ashley, do you think African-American kids have a different experience at this school than white kids or Hispanic kids or Asian kids?
Not really, not personally. I think that we all kind of have the same experience, no matter what race you are, because we're all being forced to interact with each other, either in sports or in classes. So I don't think so. I think we're at an advantage because we do get to interact with other races, not just white or Spanish, but there's, you know, 80 others we get to deal with. But I think it's all pretty even.
Hmm. Carton, let's bring you in. Was T.C. Williams different from the schools you went to before?
It was very. I moved to Alexandria in the ninth grade. Before that, I was at an all-white school.
In Virginia?
And out in Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
All-white school. When I came here to Minnie Howard, the ninth grade school for T.C., it was very difficult for me the first few months, not knowing how to get along with the rest of the people.
And how did you resolve that question?
I resolved it by just pushing myself out, just trying to meet everyone and try to interact with everyone. It just took a while, though. I'm glad I got it over with in high school instead of trying to go through it in real life.
What have you learned, do you think?
Tolerance, respect, stuff I had trouble dealing with when I was in middle school.
Let me ask the same question that we put to Ashley just a minute ago. Do you sense that white kids experience school differently from black, Hispanic, or Asian kids, or from those 83 other different backgrounds?
Not really. But generally, we're all getting the same education. We're all getting the same experience. It's just your own personal view on it.
Mm-hmm. Marquita told us she is in AP. What about you?
I'm in regular classes.
You're in regular classes. What about you, Ashley?
I'm in AP also.
You're also in AP.
Yes.
But that is, would you suggest, Carlton, unusual to have that racial breakdown here on this panel? Two black kids who were in AP classes and one white kid who isn't?
It's unusual, but it's not unheard of.
Not unheard of. So it's nothing, you're not in AP, you wouldn't feel more comfortable if you were in AP?
Not in the slightest, no.
Was there a reason you decided not to go after it?
No, not really. Just easier classes.
Easier classes. That and the cafeteria, thus far the two things I totally understand. I wonder, wanted to ask all of you where you think you're going to be this time next year, where you're going to be going as a result of your experience and your education here at T.C. Williams High School. Ashley Dawkins, where are you
going
to go to school?
I'm going to Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia.
And why did you pick that particular school?
Well, my sister goes there, and when we took her down to help her move in 2 years ago, I fell in love. It's a beautiful campus. The people there are really friendly, and it has a homey feeling. But it's still a big school, and it kind of reminded me a lot of TC. It's diverse, you know. It has different races, and that's what I'm comfortable around. I grew up in a setting of different races, and I think that it's kind of a safety blanket going to Tech. It's the same thing. It's clearly majority white, but there's still different minorities represented there. And I think that was one of the bigger parts of my choices between the different schools because, you know, I got into a lot of big schools and it came down to like where I'd be comfortable, like socially, and that's where I picked.
What were the two final choices?
UVA and Virginia Tech.
UVA out in Charlottesville?
In Charlottesville, yes.
Yeah, and that's a.
It's a great school, and I was really honored to get in, but I think that the social pressure from people saying, oh, you got an UVA, it's a great school, you should go, but me personally, my gut told me Tech was more me, and I went with that. And, you know, I have friends going to UVA, and I'm going to visit them, and I'm sure it's great, but Tech was more my personality, so that's what I'll be next year.
Marquita, what about you?
Well, I'll be attending Norfolk State University.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's a HBCU. And
that's historically black.
Yes.
Yes.
And I love HBCU marching bands. So I like the high stepping, and a predominantly white school does not, you know, have that there. So basically, I do like to be around other type of people, but I feel more comfortable with blacks just because, you know, I can go in there and feel at home. Mm-hmm. So,
Carlton, what about you?
I won't be attending college after high school. I'm enlisted in the United States Navy at the moment.
And so by this, who knows where you're going to be by this time next year?
I could be anywhere in the world.
Let's see if we can get some more audience participation. Of course, we want to hear from you. What's it like at your school today, 50 years after the Brown versus Board of Education decision that prohibited segregation in public schools? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. We also have an email address, TOTN@NPR.org. And also with us here at the mini auditorium at T.C. Williams High School are members of, current students here and alumni and some other guests as well. Let's go to a question from the audience. You, sir, back on the right.
My name is Brett Hewitt, and I'm a sophomore here at TC. My question is for Ashley Dawkins. With TC having an open enrollment program with all honors and AP courses, why do you think that it's so predominantly white?
I think that the honors program and kids being in those starts back in elementary school with the TAG program, Talented and Gifted. I think that when kids are placed in those in third and fourth grade, they're just kind of pushed along and they stay in it the whole time just because that's what they're used to. Their parents put them in there and they just stay in that. That's their comfort zone. But I think when kids get to high school, they think, ninth grade, they think, I wasn't in TAG in eighth and other grades, then why should I be in honors now? And their friends, the people they were in class with throughout elementary school, weren't honors or TAG, so they wouldn't stay with their friends, which is a big part of picking classes. So I think that's probably the biggest reason why.
Open enrollment, does that mean that every student is eligible?
You can pick. Yeah, for honors and AP, you can just sign up. It's okay. Not like qualifications, really.
Okay. Thanks very much for the question. Appreciate it. Marquita, we heard earlier that some sports tend to be, in terms of those who participate in the sports, different races. What about those who show up to cheer the football team or the basketball team or the baseball team or the softball team on? Does the crowd sit by racial groupings?
Yes.
So socially as well, I mean, when you leave school, do you hang out with African-American friends or do you have friends from all kinds of different groups?
I have friends from all types of different groups, but mostly I hang with African-American, but just because they live by me. But I hang around with anybody.
Carlton, what about you?
I hang around with my friends no matter what the race is. I live in a Spanish neighborhood. I don't live in the predominantly white areas of Alexandria.
And, of course, the Navy to which you'll be going is...
Is very mixed.
Very mixed. And finally, Ashley, you. Do you?
I have a lot of different friends of different races, a little bit of everything, so I kind of mix it up.
We're at T.C. Williams High School in Virginia with students and alumni of the school. We're talking about the legacy of the Brown versus Board of Education decision from 50 years ago today. We'll be back with more of the conversation, more of your phone calls and your emails after a short break. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting today from T.C. Williams High School in Alexandria, Virginia. It's been 50 years to the day since the Supreme Court ordered the desegregation of American public schools. That's two generations of American students. What does that ruling mean today We don't want to hear just from black students or white students. We want to hear from students, Asian, Latino, of all different backgrounds. Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or send us an email, TOTN@npr.org. And joining us now is Winona Morissette Johnson. She's the U.S. government teacher here at T.C. Williams, and she has been for the past 15 years, also a native of Alexandria, Virginia. Thanks very much for being with us on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
From where you sit on the other side of the classroom, I wonder, what's your assessment of integration at T.C. Williams?
I see integration working very well here with regards to the students. I think they have no problem getting along with each other. It's true. They choose to segregate, but I think it's a comfort level. I think in terms of integration, true integration happening in the school, I think we still have work to do.
Mm-hmm. When you saw the classroom dividing along racial lines, I mean, not the classroom so much, the cafeteria and other, did it make you stop and say, oh my gosh, what are we doing here?
No, I understand it. As a government teacher, I understand it. I understand the difference between de jure segregation, mm-hmm. which is what Brown actually ended, and de facto. And what I see in the cafeteria, what I see acting out or playing out all over America is really de facto segregation.
Do racial relations come up during your government class?
Sometimes.
I bet they did a lot coming up on this anniversary.
Yeah. It's really refreshing to, and the students like to engage in this kind of conversation. Mm-hmm. And we were talking earlier before the break, adults don't often engage in similar dialogue, and maybe we should do a little bit more dialoguing as a faculty, as a community, about those things we can do to help further along the integration, the true integration in education, giving opportunity to all students.
When we hear from students, and I think statistics will bear it out, that AP classes tend to be majority white, the regular classes tend not to be, is that reflective of an institutional difficulty, an institutional problem, a social problem? What's going on?
I think there's a lot of things going on. There is some community awareness that needs to be identified or at least exposed. I think the community needs to understand that some of the old ways and practices need to be eliminated and discarded. I think that there is some socialization issues with students not feeling comfortable walking into certain environments. Mm-hmm. I think that there's more we can do on a lot of levels.
Give me a for instance. Where might somebody feel uncomfortable?
Well, someone might feel uncomfortable in a situation that they're not haven't had any prior experience with. So, I would say any minority who hasn't had any experience or exposure to one particular group might feel uncomfortable when they are the only person in that group. And, you know, that could be a white person going into a group of all black people as well. But I think that's always an opportunity for that type of uncomfortable feeling.
There's an awful lot of challenges for teachers in an integrated school. Obviously the achievement gap, which we're sort of addressing parenthetically here, but that's a major challenge. Also dealing with kids from all sorts of different backgrounds, not just black, white. There are 83 different flags out in that foyer.
Mm-hmm. And it requires that we are sensitive as teachers. So I know the administration and school system tries to give us a lot of guidance in terms of different staff development programs that help us become more sensitive and aware of the various issues facing different various groups that we teach in the classroom, and try to give us more strategies on how to deliver instruction in the classroom. But it does require some sensitivity to diversity.
Let's get some more callers involved, and this is Ashley, who's on the telephone with us from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi, yeah, am I on?
Yes, you're on the air, Ashley, go ahead.
Our second
Ashley this hour.
I'm a graduate assistant teacher at the University of Arizona. I teach one of the basic introductory freshman courses. One of the only black people in my department, and as well, I'd have to say in the 3 years that I've been a graduate assistant teacher, I've only had 3 black students. The thing that concerns me is that despite the fact that it's visually overwhelming, the fact that I work on a majority white campus, Mm-hmm. My white students seem to have no concept of the fact that there is such a thing as discrimination or racial.
I'm afraid your cell phone is cutting in and out, Ashley, but I think we've got the gist of your point. Thanks very much for giving us a phone call. And Winona Morissette Johnson, do you find her experience illuminating? I mean, obviously, it's a different situation here at T.C. Williams when you have such great diversity as opposed to just having a majority white group like that.
Well, my AP classes are very diverse. They tend to be very diverse. I don't think that my AP classes are typical. Maybe if you go into a chemistry classroom or AP chemistry or physics or maybe statistics class, you may not see that diversity. But that has to do with other issues.
Is your AP class integrated because there's a black teacher?
I think that has something to do with it. I don't think it has a lot to do with it, but I think it does matter that I'm a teacher of color.
Also with us here today at T.C. Williams is Micah Pollack. She's an assistant professor at Harvard's Graduate School of Education, the author of Color Mute, Race Talk Dilemmas in an American School. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks.
We've been sort of talking about racial issues and how kids talk about race. Your book looks at a high school in California. How does what you've heard here from the T.C. Williams students compare to students at Columbus High?
I think a lot of what's shown today is that young people today are actually pretty good at talking about race with one another. I think that what the young people earlier today were getting at is some of the harder race issues to talk about in education, which are the racial inequality issues that still exist 50 years after Brown, how educational opportunity is still racially distributed between in the middle of classrooms, between classrooms, within schools, schools within schools, tracking all these kinds of patterns. I think it's a lot easier for young people and older people to talk about how kids get along, things like lunchtime, who sits where. A lot harder for people, and I found in my own research in California, to talk about how, for example, adults and kids get along and how race might matter to that, and also to talk about the opportunity issues that the young people were starting to get at. So my concept of color muteness in the book is really trying to sort of pinpoint a phenomenon of people not talking about race in schools. And I'm particularly worried about people not talking about these continuing inequalities that exist 50 years after Brown. And I think that the biggest danger that I sort of would pose to the young people in the audience is the danger of the grandchildren of Brown, you guys, taking racial inequality for granted. And I sort of want to pose a question of, has racial equality, which was really the goal of Brown, been achieved? If not, what do we need to be doing about it? So these kinds of equality questions are much harder questions to ask than where kids sit in the lunchroom kinds of questions.
Indeed, they're difficult to answer as well. So,
Very much so.
Getting back to Winona Morissette Johnson, integrated school here at T.C. Williams, does integration equal educational opportunity?
Well, I think the opportunity is there. We're not restricted by law anymore to, like, caps our achievement. But I think that we are still growing to, you know, what is equalization? You know, how do you achieve that? I think it's a difficult thing to get around. This de facto segregation is really a problem. I think there are so many factors that impact on trying to give everyone equal opportunity in terms of what we have to do. It's not just the schools that are involved in this process.
Of course, schools are just a reflection of the community around them.
I think so, yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah. So it depends on where you are and what community you're in, too.
Did you find that in California where you did your study?
Find which?
Did you find that? Obviously, the school is a reflection of its community.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think the reason why educators and students are so important is that schools are places where the deepest issues of race play out, that education is one of sort of the core locations for the kinds of dilemmas of race that we experience 50 years after Brown. And so I think that schools reflect society, sure, that a racially unequal system
comes in the doors with kids. On the other hand, folks in schools and in districts can either reproduce that system in everyday ways, or they can actively struggle against that system. So schools don't just reflect society. They either reproduce it or they work to change it.
Let's get another question from the audience here at T.C. Williams. Yes, sir.
Hi. I think I'm a teacher at T.C. Williams, that one of the most painful things to talk about and one of the saddest things is the position of African-American males. And Ashley had mentioned that earlier when she was saying there were few African-American males in AP classes. And it's my observation that, take the boys from Africa, from Ghana, Ethiopia, and different countries, from Nigeria, they, in general, are incredibly motivated and here to take advantage of every opportunity. And with so many American-born black males, that sense of motivation is, from what I see, is simply not there, and kids themselves say it. And I think that's a major issue, and I don't know how we address that. I think that's something beyond integration. You can't help but feel that sadness when you see Ralph Eubanks talk and the suffering he went through and those other pioneers went through 30 years ago, and you see him as director of publishing at the Library of Congress. And then I see so many of my African-American male students just not taking advantage of the education that's there. I don't know whether they're afraid to compete or what's going on, but it's a definite phenomenon that we have to deal with.
We didn't get your name, I'm sorry.
Pat Welsh is my name.
Pat, thanks very much. Micah Pollack?
One of the things I'm really interested in that I explore in my book is the ways, the sort of scripts we fall into when we do talk about race. As well as the patterns in when we don't talk about race. And one of the main ways that race does get talked about, I would say, at this point, 50 years after Brown, are people wondering about what black kids do. And I think that a question that we need to ask more often is to investigate the systems that young black men, for example, are put in within schools. That it's one important question to ask, to think about where black males are coming from. But it's also important to ask how various adults in a school system, at the school level, at the district level, also participate in creating patterns that might impact more on black males. So what I'm urging in the book is something I'm calling an urgent language of communal responsibility, and I think it's very important when we talk about any particular race pattern, not to just think about the particular kids, in a sense, victimized by a pattern or impacted by a race pattern, but also how various players play a role in producing patterns in schools.
And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. Winona Morissette-Johnson, did you want to address that that question?
Well, I just think as a mother of a black male, a successful black male, I know that the school system does play a really significant role. I read some books on the topic, the Kanjufu books, they talk about the third grade failure mm-hmm. syndrome. I think the parents have to be aware. I think it's a partnership, and I think the parents have to be aware of the pitfalls in the system and be vigilant with their children. And I think as a school system, we need to cure some of the insensitivity and educate ourselves to some of the real issues, that's I think what you're talking about, that things that we can do to accelerate and enhance that experience within the classroom.
Let's bring another voice into the conversation. Amy Stewart Wells is a professor of sociology of education at Teachers College at Columbia University in New York, also the co-author of a recent study, How Desegregation Changed Us, the Effects of Racially Mixed Schools on Students and Society. Very good of you to be with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about the era of desegregation you studied. This was obviously Brown versus Board of Education in 1954, but you were just studying about 20 years after that.
That's right. As several panelists in the prior panel talked about, there wasn't much actual desegregation of public schools until the late 60s and early 70s, so we decided to look at the first group of students who went through desegregation in large numbers in this society. And so we looked at students who started kindergarten in 1967 and graduated in the spring of 1980.
And why? So you focused on your conversation on your study on the period of greatest integration. Right. As you look at the numbers now, obviously schools are less and less integrated.
Yes, since the class of 80s graduated, actually by the mid-1980s to late 80s, the percentage of students in integrated schools has declined.
And what did the students you talked to who were then in integrated schools, and now they're adults, what did they think of their experience in high school and middle school?
It's really striking, the findings from our study, because while I think it kind of wraps up a lot of things that have been talked about today, while they clearly talked about inequality in their desegregated schools, they talked about the same kinds of issues of tracking that we've talked about today. They talked about a lack of multicultural curriculum. They
tracking talked, some kids for high achievement programs and others for less high achievement.
That's right, with the high tracks classes being predominantly white and the lower level classes being predominantly African American or Latino. And also a lack of discussion about race in the schools. It was kind of race was a taboo, and colorblindness was the talk in the school. A lack of multiculturalism in the curriculum. One teacher said we basically just kept teaching the dead white men during that period. And then in spite of all this, the students actually did create friendships across racial lines in many of the ways we've talked about here today, in athletics and extracurricular activities, in student government, in drama, in band, and actually many of the activities that we're cutting now from school budgets, ironically enough. And when they reflected back on their time in desegregated schools, they were really struck by what a powerful experience it was to them, and how growing up in a diverse society, they had learned to get along with people of other backgrounds. They dispelled stereotypes. They'd become more comfortable in interracial settings. They compare themselves to their spouses and friends who didn't have those experiences as children, and talk about how they're much more comfortable being a minority, a racial minority in a room.
And we only have a minute before the break, but how diverse are their lives today?
That's the really ironic thing. Back in the 1970s, they believed they were being prepared for the real world, quote-unquote, when they were going to desegregated schools, and they found as they've grown up, and they're now adults in their early 40s, that the real world is very segregated.
So they don't live in integrated communities? Do they send their children to integrated schools?
For the most part, the whites in particular are in very segregated communities, predominantly white communities. The white graduates are also far less likely to be sending their children to integrated schools. Only 40% of them were. The African American and Latino graduates were more likely to be in desegregated neighborhoods, although they talk about those neighborhoods changing now as there's white flight going on. The same things we're seeing in the 2000 census data. As blacks are moving to suburbs, those suburbs are flipping from predominantly white to predominantly African American. And also the blacks and Latinos have worked harder to get their children into integrated schools because they see that those are the schools where the curriculum is the most challenging and the opportunities are the greatest.
We're going to have more of this conversation after a short break. More from the students and former students of T.C. Williams High School in Alexandria, Virginia. We're talking about the 50th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education, what it means today. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan at T.C. Williams High School in Alexandria, Virginia. On the 50th anniversary of the Supreme Court ruling that ordered desegregation of America's public schools, how do you or your kids experience the legacy of that ruling 50 years on? Join the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guests are Winona Morissette-Johnson, U.S. government teacher here at T.C. Williams High School, Micah Pollack, assistant professor at Harvard's Graduate School of Education, the author of Color Mute, Race Talk Dilemmas in American School, and Amy Stewart-Wells, professor of sociology of education at Teachers College at Columbia University and the co-author of a recent study, How Desegregation Changed Us, the Effects of Racially Mixed Schools on Students and Society. And Amy, I wanted to ask you just before the break, you were describing how these kids who went to integrated schools, 30 years ago, now tend to live segregated lives, including sending their kids, perhaps as a matter of where they happen to live now, to largely white schools or largely minority schools. If they valued integration so much, as they said they did in your study, and how it prepared them for what they then thought was to be the real world, why wouldn't they try to continue to live integrated lives?
Well, the interesting thing, and this is particularly true for the white graduates, and this was one of the first studies that actually looked at white graduates of desegregated schools later on in life, was that they talk about becoming more segregated immediately after high school. And this is something the graduates of T.C. Williams might be thinking about. When they went to college, that they found the college campuses, although they were fairly diverse, they were actually much more segregated on the campuses than they had been within the schools. Those same extracurricular activities that had brought them together in high school actually separated them more in college, as fraternities and sororities, for instance, were very segregated, and several of the extracurricular activities were as well. And then they kind of went on and tended to marry people in their same racial groups, and I think whites in particular were fairly naive about the ways in which they were being steered into white neighborhoods. And kind of when we came along 20 years later and started asking them to reflect back on their high school, they started to contrast their 20 years ago in high school and that diversity that they'd had and that they'd enjoyed with the segregation they lived with today. The graduates of color were much more conscious of this type of segregation and the ways in which neighborhoods were changing and the ways in which housing segregation is pretty pervasive in the society.
Go ahead.
I also think that there's I guess I would call it a stigma of inferiority that attaches to minority classes, to minority groups, or anything that is majority minority participating. That if you're in a community and blacks move in, you got to move. If it's a largely minority classroom, that's not good. You got to get my kid out of that. So I think that there's a stigma of inferiority that kind of makes people who are seeking for better things not to want to really integrate, but to segregate.
That was Winona Morissette Johnson. Let's get another caller on the line, and we'll talk with Decker, who joins us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hey, how are you doing? How are the panelists doing as well?
I think they're all doing well.
I'm a 22-year-old African-American male. I went to one of the most nationally recognized diverse schools. Well, once nationally recognized diverse schools here in Charlotte, West Charlotte High School. We once had supreme academics along with a 55-45 split among blacks and whites. But 5 years removed from that, we find ourselves now at 90% black and 5% white. And this kind of correlates with the removal of busing. And to touch on a previous point I was listening on about the effect on African Americans as they go to college and et cetera, I went to NC State University, which is a predominantly white university, and I saw everything that spoke about. I felt that, one, I enjoy my diverse education, but I also felt that it gave me a disservice because I felt like I had blinders on for the 3 years I was in high school.
You felt like they fooled you?
In a way, yes. I felt almost cheated out of reality. Though I enjoyed the interaction that I had with my classmates, the burden was still on me. A lot of my white counterparts could, I guess, melt into society and not necessarily feel, and this is me making an assumption, but in the college campus it was easier for them to assimilate, whereas I went to a situation where people didn't want to interact with me like I did in high school. There wasn't that perceived, there wasn't that influence to be diverse there, as it was in high school, where it was a goal of everybody to show that we could do it, that we could be a diverse high school and everybody could hopefully get along, but also we could do academics.
Amy Stewart Wells, is this not atypical of some of the responses you had when you did you study?
This is all too familiar, and we actually looked at West Charlotte High School was one of the schools that we studied. That as these graduates left these schools, they realized that they'd had a very unique experience. And I think it also is a statement about the role of public schools in society and that we put a lot of the burden of Brown on the public school system while much of the rest of the society remained fairly segregated. And so when students left these schools and these institutions that had struggled to fulfill the promise of Brown, they found a very different environment as adults.
And if I could add just one more point. One of the things that I've noticed here in Charlotte is that with the removal of busing, it has uncovered a lot of the other, the underlying causes for the segregation. You look at I think that if we're going to actually look at diversity, we need to look at the socioeconomic diversity of our community. Charlotte's a very economically segregated community, and I think that causes a lot of the racial segregation that we have in the schools, in our neighborhoods, and in our churches. And until we really focus on that as a part of the problem, then I don't think that just putting black kids and white kids together is going to solve anything.
Winona Morissette Johnson, would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. I think, I told you earlier, money is the great equalizer, if you want to really think about it. The money can give you the exposure to help your child to have the same experiences as other children, and it really makes a difference. But values, I think that we need to, as a community, I heard the caller talk about individual responsibility, and I do believe that the government, which the school is a part of, can only do so much. But it does fall back on each individual to work hard to instill those values of education and to work within the school to get involved into. You never turn over your education to a school district. You always have to be involved, and I think that's one of the things that parents need to learn.
Decker, I don't know if you have children of your own now, but...
No, I'm 22. I hope not.
Okay, well, if you do, would you plan to send them to public school there?
Yes. Just because I saw that my high school education was a community making an investment in me. And I think that there needs to be more of that. I think that one of the problems that we see is a lot of people don't want to, quote unquote, sacrifice their children. And so it's very self-interested. And so I think that for me, I think that I will, because I see that as investing in a grander goal. And I hope that my children will gain what I gained, and that's perspective, that they won't be cynics, but that they'll see that they need to put a little bit more into the system if they want it to be a little bit better, and not just better for me and my family.
Micah Pollack, did you have something to add?
Yeah, I was just going to say, in terms of Decker feeling, you know, cheated by his desegregated education, I'm really struck when I teach classes of graduate students how many white students, say in their his age and older, went to school in completely white environments. And I really wonder what that means for their analysis of race and racial inequality in America 50 years after Brown, because these, I think, are kids who are particularly set up to look around and say, racial inequality is sort of just how it is. I went to a school in the suburbs. I had great resources. That was my due. That's just how it is. And so I think that these kinds of analyses get inbred sometimes when we have stark segregation as well.
Decker, thanks very much for the phone call.
Oh, thank you very much. You all have a great day.
Okay, you too. Our guests here at T.C. Williams High School in Alexandria, Virginia, Winona Morissette Johnson, a U.S. government teacher at this high school, Micah Pollack at Harvard's Graduate School of Education, and Amy Stewart Wells at Teachers College at Columbia University. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And let's get a couple of questions from the audience. The woman to my right.
Hi, my name is Monica Raghunathan. I'm a senior at T.C. Williams High School. One thing I would like to point out about this whole discussion about diversity is it is no longer a black and white issue. We focus way too much on it being a black and white issue, and I think that there is a barrier between the older generation and our generation. We see it as just Hispanics, blacks, whites, Asian Americans, Middle Easterns. It's no longer black and white. We need to stop focusing on blacks and whites. T.C. Williams is very diverse, but there is room for improvement. A lot of interaction comes from your exposure to sports, extracurricular clubs, language, pop culture, MTV, BET. If you don't know the language, if you don't know music, it's very hard for you to get exposed to diversity. If you don't know the language, how are you supposed to talk to people that are mixed? How are you supposed to join sports if you don't know the club? You're not going to know how to talk to people. You know, and I think that we focus too much on people that are already Americanized. We need to focus on people that are foreign. And I think that at TC, that is a big problem at TC, because the foreigners are isolated. When you walk into the cafeteria, I don't really eat at the cafeteria. I go off campus. But when I have walked in there, it is mostly foreigners. And the reason for that is because they're comfortable there. But the ratio of who eats in the cafeteria and who goes off campus, there's almost 2,000 people at our school. And probably our cafeteria feeds probably 300, 400. And you can meet way more people if you go off campus. But who goes off campus are people that are Americanized. And I think that next time we have a discussion like this, we really need to focus more on foreigners.
Okay. Did you want to address that, Amy?
That's a really important point that she brought up. Currently, white students make up only 60% of the public school population in this country, and within the next 20 years, whites will be in the minority among public school students. And African Americans now are a smaller percentage of that population than Latino students are today, so immigration is having a major impact on the diversity in our public schools. The sad thing is, as these schools are becoming more and more diverse, they're also becoming more and more segregated. And unless we change that, unless we have leaders who can help us think about how to change school choice policies and create more diverse schools, I think we're going to be in trouble.
I'm going to get one more question from the audience, if you would. And this man to our right, to my left, rather, has been very patient.
Hello, my name is Carl Leonard, and I graduated from T.C. Williams in the class of 1990. Discussions like this are a little difficult for me, and I guess folks from my generation, because we came right after the big civil rights, push. During my time, I was never, spat at or had rocks thrown at me, but I've had some experiences that left questions in my mind. And some folks were asking questions earlier. I believe young Mr. Hewitt here was asking, why weren't there more African-American males in AP classes? And just before I came to T.C. Williams at a previous school, I had come up from the North Carolina school system. I went to elementary school in Charlotte, North Carolina, so I was a direct beneficiary of many of the programs and projects that Ms. Scoggins was a part of.
Mm-hmm.
But I was encouraged to apply for an AP English class, and my family raised me to appreciate the value of education. It was very important at home that I study and that I work hard. I worked very hard in that class, and I read, worked hard, and each time I submitted exams, paperwork, it seemed that my grades were inconsistent with those in the class. And I couldn't quite understand why. I worked harder. I worked even more.
I'm afraid we're running out of time. If you could summarize your point?
To summarize, I was able to achieve rather spectacular goals in other academic areas. At the end of my year, the teacher who had dismissed me from the class came up to me. He didn't say anything to me. He extended his hand, and he looked me in the eye, and he shook my hand, and I left the campus. Now, for my generation, no one ever called me a name. No one ever threw anything at me. But you encounter moments like that where you're never really sure exactly what had occurred. And so when I came to T.C. Williams and I was not in the AP English class, it was the efforts of the students and the faculty here. They prodded me and got me back into the AP courses here, where I excelled and was later able to do great things.
Well, with that story, we're afraid we're going to have to leave it there. But thank you very much for telling us about that. We appreciate it. And I wanted to thank our guests today. They have been Winona Morissette Johnson, a U.S. government teacher here at T.C. Williams High School, Micah Pollack at Harvard's Graduate School of Education, the author of Color Mute, Race Talk, Dilemmas in American School, and Amy Stewart Wells, professor of sociology of education at Teachers College at Columbia University, co-author of How Desegregation Changed Us, The Effects of Racially Mixed Schools on Students and Society. We'd also like to thank T.C. Williams students Ashley Dawkins, Marquita Thompson, and Carlton Hummel, and all of those of you in the audience who helped make this program possible. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News. Excuse me, I'm in Alexandria.